Welcome back to the latest edition of the Sports Coaching Podcast with me, Sam Holmshaw. This week, I'm joined by David Bard, current Girls and Women's Club Developmental Officer at the Scottish Football Association and Academy Coach at Hearts Football Club. David first provides an overview of the concept, as well as discussing the learning design theory behind the scoreboard soccer concept and the benefits of its implementation within youth development. We also discuss the correct balance between being competitive and having fun within youth development, and of course provide the implications for coaching practice.
The Sports Coaching Podcast with Sam Holmshaw.
Okay, welcome back to the latest episode of the Sports Coaching Podcast with me, Sam Holmshaw. As always, we hope everyone is well and you know, doing good who's listening today. So, absolutely delighted to be joined by David Baird, who hopefully I've got the pronunciation of his surname correctly. But David, delighted to have you. How are you? How are you doing?
Yeah, very well. Thanks, Sam. And I've been enjoying the podcast so far, so thanks for letting me come on today.
No, it's a real pleasure to have you on, and really appreciate the feedback. So, David, I mean, you know, I guess I said this to everyone, you know, we're coming to the end of this strange period of lockdown and everything slowly getting back to normal. But how was it for you? What was it like? How were you getting on?
Yeah, it's obviously been a strange time globally, very challenging. And hope everyone listening has managed to keep themselves and their loved ones safe. And well, it's been a strange time for me. You know, lockdown was almost welcomed in a way, because I actually became a dad in January, and then this all obviously kind of started around March where I am. So I kind of appreciated a lot of time at home with my wife and my daughter that I probably wouldn't have got normally. You know yourself, Sam, when you work in sport, it can be very, very demanding hours and very challenging. So I was actually lucky enough to have a lot of time at home. I think the other side of that as well is just having that little bit of relaxation. You know, I think when you're, certainly ever since I started coaching, there's always something you need to be mindful of. You don't necessarily need to be on the pitch to be coaching. You know, you've always got a session to plan or a session to review or a parent or a guardian to speak to, a player that you need to reach out to. And this was probably the first time that I can remember where everything just kind of paused. And it was good just to kind of, you know, relax that mental load a little bit and almost get a little bit of time back to yourself. But having said that, I think that's, you know, gone on a little bit too long, and thankfully we're starting to see a lot of activity kind of safely return, and everyone's looking forward to getting back on the pitch, probably no more so than the players. You know, lockdowns also gave a great opportunity for a lot of coaches that I've been speaking to, and I've certainly been investing in my own kind of learning and development, you know, listening to podcasts such as this and going on to webinars and maybe investing in some online courses. But for the players, they just must be desperate just to get back out and playing football and taking part in the sport that they love. So hopefully we're edging towards that now.
Yeah, super stuff. I imagine that was really nice for you. And yeah, congratulations. Amazing to hear. So, you know, David, for those of the listeners that, you know, don't know you and aren't aware of your background, I think a great place to start would be if you just want to give us a bit of a brief overview or just about your coaching background, your experiences and what's led you to where you are today.
I think a big inspiration for me, if I speak about my background in coaching, my initial inspiration probably came from my playing experience. Obviously, I've always love football, you know, watching and playing football in the street. But my actual experience of organised football and organised coaching maybe wasn't a positive one. And I mean, I think you could actually, looking back now, you know, loosely kind of call it football, because we ran around the pitch for half the session, never got many touches of the ball. And then when we did go into games, it was kind of like, you know, two touch or one touch finish. And as someone who just wanting to dribble and take players on, and, you know, I'm not saying I was great at this, but this was why I was going along in the first place. This is what I wanted to do. I wanted to try and be like the Zidane and the Ronaldinho's on the TV. And then that love and that passion was, you know, very quickly diminished when you were told to run around the pitch, you know, in the rain and the cold in the west of Scotland. So I don't feel as if I had too much of a fun experience, and I don't feel as if I had a lot of time just playing the game that, you know, that I absolutely loved, and probably wanted to give that experience back when I started, you know, becoming a coach myself. And I feel like a lot of coaches, and you know, and a lot of them were mums and dads and parents and guardians and volunteers who felt they were qualified to try and turn the 12 or 13 year olds in front of them into, you know, the next Archie Gemmill or Kenny Dalglish, when really, you know, I was going along, never really gave a second thought that I could be a top player one day. I just wanted to play and I wanted to have fun and I wanted to engage with my friends and try new skills and try and take players on. But all that was very quickly almost coached out of me, you know, getting into trouble if you try and dribble the ball and take someone on. So I didn't have a very fun experience as a player. So I quite quickly started to pursue this idea of coaching and trying to give that experience that I wanted to the young players that I was going on to work with. So yeah, in regards to my coaching background, you know, when I left high school, I went on to college and then further on to university to study sports coaching and sports development. I was really lucky that while I was studying and obviously having to fund that somehow, I managed to get a part-time job in a football environment. So I, at the time, I was living in the west coast of Scotland, and Kevin Keegan, when he retired from management, he started a facility in Glasgow called Soccer Circus. You know, and it was the kind of thing that I always just believed Kevin would have put his name on, and you never would have seen him. So I was starstruck from day one when he came in and sat in my job interview, and that was great because I was studying sports coaching and sports development and going through a couple of coaching badges, and then my evenings and weekends I was coaching in Soccer Circus. And any of the listeners that want to do a wee bit of research on what that was, it was fantastic fun. You know, it was, you know, Kevin described it in his autobiography as a cross between football training and Disneyland. You know, it was trying to knock over targets and hit lights on the wall, dribble over lights on the floor, shooting galleries that were essentially kind of like big bowling alleys, but you're shooting the ball into the back of the net, and it just kept feeding it out. And it was absolutely fantastic. But on the side of that, which was, you know, essentially a football version of mini golf, you know, we had a small five-a-side pitch in there where we would run kind of striker clinics or technical sessions or little, you know, birthday parties, coaching sessions with Kevin Keegan and this kind of thing. So it allowed me to learn a lot because I started to get really interested in that side of things, and I started to see, you know, I had that role model, I had that, what I believe I lacked when I was an actual, you know, player of football. I was seeing Kevin interact with younger kids, and it was all about fun, as the name Soccer Circuit suggests. And I was seeing the drills that you could do where, you know, not once was he saying you have to play two touch and things were overprescribed, and it was all about relationships with the kids. You know, getting to know their names and setting up challenges and praising what they did well before maybe giving a wee bit of constructive feedback. So as a young coach, I was just, you know, absorbing all this and really starting to invest in that side of things on the five-a-side pitch that the coaching sessions we used to do. So much so that I kind of worked my way up within that company even after I graduated from university. I went full-time at Soccer Circus, and luckily enough, the next branch that Kevin opened up was in the Middle East. It was over in Dubai. And I went over there in a kind of coach educator role, you know, to show them the kind of sessions we would do. And it was all about fun, you know, Soccer Circus, half football, half fun. And that was a great learning experience for me to throw myself into a different culture, a different way of coaching, you know, taking a session in Dubai with 12 kids and maybe four or five different languages within there, because there's a lot of people that travel to and from Dubai for many different reasons. And so, you know, learning a wee bit more about body language and just learning a wee bit more about kids' backgrounds and who related well to what and how you could engage with different kids and then, you know, boys and girls, older, younger, as I keep saying, from different backgrounds and different cultures. That was a phenomenal experience for me. And then my next journey was over to America. And I know, Sam, you've had a lot of people on here speak about their time in America, and mine was very similar. I think one of the biggest benefits to my time in America is just how much time you had on the grass, you know, delivering four, five, six sessions a day, summer camps, weekends. Now, I look back and I've got some really good friends over there that potentially went through the motions and just delivered, you know, very similar sessions. But just having that amount of time on the grass is such a good way to progress as a coach, in my opinion. You know, I say to the players, you know, one of the best ways to learn to play football is to play football. And I find myself saying to newer coaches, one of the best ways to learn to coach is to coach. Go out there and plan something, deliver something, write it down, what worked well, how would you adapt it? So my experiences as a younger coach at college and university in Dubai and in New Jersey in America, just learned so much. And I think going around and working with loads of different players really helps. You know, we talk about the importance of recognising the age and stage of the players that you're working with. Sometimes if you don't travel or at least go out and watch other sessions or speak to other coaches, you can get kind of stuck in a rut with the age and stage that's in front of you and start to think, say you're coaching the same 12 kids every week, you start to think the best player within those 12 kids is the best player in the country. You know, you start to think, you just get stuck in there. So I think it's really eye-opening to go out and try and learn from other coaches and try and take as many experiences on board as possible, and you probably learn more from the negative ones than you do from the positive ones. In 2015, I moved back to Scotland. I moved to Edinburgh, and I started coaching with started doing just some hours with the Scottish FA. I'm still currently employed by the Scottish FA in a development officer role. And in my spare time, evenings and weekends, I work with Heart of Midlothian within their academy. I do some coaching within their academy. So I kind of see best of both worlds, using my experience kind of during the day job to knock down barriers and try and get everyone involved in football and share that love for the game and hopefully a more positive experience I had. And then my evenings and weekends are spent coaching.
Yeah, really interesting background. And, you know, I'm sat here listening, you know, very similar to, you know, I got involved in coaching. I didn't feel that I was ever coached properly. I didn't really feel that gave me the tool set that I needed from a coach at that time. And again, that was a big inspiration for me to almost coach properly in a way of what I wanted to do at the time. No, so really, really great to hear you. You probably noticed me smiling quite a bit through that. Really intriguing. So, you know, just tell us a bit more about your role with the Scottish FA. I'm interested to hear a bit more about that.
I'm very passionate about my role with the Scottish FA. I think I'm working with a great organisation that does so much great work. So when I first moved to Edinburgh, I essentially just started as a kind of casual coach, just coaching some of the Scottish FA programmes within this area. And then I moved into West Lothian, which is a bigger region within Scotland, as football development officer. So that role was just about increasing participation, just sharing the joy of the beautiful game with as many people as possible. So it was great for experience again, trying to knock down barriers. You know, we did sessions for kind of parent and player sessions, tall and tiny footballers, which was all about parent and guardians being positive role models for young kids getting involved in the game. A lot of female football, para football programs, walking football sessions. And a lot of consultation with local schools and local clubs and different organisations, just to try and identify perhaps gaps and limited opportunities for people to take part in football, and then going and doing a bit of partnership working to try and create opportunities there. I then moved into my current role, which is the Girls and Women's Club Development Officer for the South East region, which includes West Lothian and a wider area. And that's just all about growing the girls and women's game. So trying to support the clubs within that region have the strongest kind of female pathway possible, which I'm absolutely loving, to be honest. In that area of passion, that area is just growing and growing in regards to the passion for it. As someone who's really positive about creating opportunities for people to take part in football, there's so much growth in the girls and women's game. So it's a really exciting thing to be part of in Scotland at the moment. I also have a kind of dual role within the Scottish FA, where I deliver some of their coach education courses for them. I'm part of their kind of tutor workforce, which is great because I get to share a little bit of the experience that I've alluded to during this podcast. But also I learn so much from, you know, going on coach education courses and learning from the coaches and the people that are coming through there. It's kind of a two-way street in regards to ongoing learning. So not really enjoying my role within the Scottish FA at the moment.
Super stuff, really, really interesting background.
The Sports Coaching Podcast with Sam Holmshaw.
So today's topic is scoreboard soccer, which is a concept that David, you've developed, and you wanted to discuss today, and I'm really intrigued and excited to hear a bit more about the concept. So, you know, I guess to start us off, do you want to give us a bit of an overview or an introduction to scoreboard soccer?
Yeah, scoreboard soccer is essentially games of football with a scoreboard to promote and praise positive behaviours. So small-sided games of football, which I'm a massive fan of, 3v3, 3v3 plus 1, 4v4. But as I was simply delivering small-sided games of football, I realised there were still barriers in regards to, you know, individual development within there. You know, there was younger boys and girls who, you know, maybe weren't getting a touch of the ball, when there was players who were getting the majority of the ball, when there's some players that maybe come to your sessions who they're actually coming to try football and they've not actually decided they have a love for football yet. So we need to implement that fun and that energy and everybody feeling included. And some of these things can potentially get lost if you just say, right, 3v3, you know, go and play, which I do think there is a place for, and it brings loads of benefits in regards to multiple 1v1 situations and transitions to goal and defending, attacking, disguised football fitness. I'm a massive fan of letting younger players play the game. I guess if I was to try and put an age on it for scoreboard soccer, which I'm going to go on and discuss just now, it's not so much about their age, it's about, you know, where they are in their development. I think that kind of ladder of individual and development, it should kind of go, you know, develop a love for football, play loads of football, and then we can teach you football, you know. And I think a lot of kids miss out on that crucial stage in their development of loads and loads and loads of playing time. I think sometimes as coaches we're guilty of saying, you know, he or she needs to work on this or that, or, you know, not scanning enough or controlling the ball properly or taking heavy touches. And sometimes I look at kids and I feel as if I can put that down to he or she's just not played enough of the game. Just not enough of trial and error and kind of learn through doing. So I'll try not to go on too many tangents to try and explain what is a real simple concept. You know, I will get there in the end, and any of your listeners, Sam, that are interested in receiving all these session plans and implementing a little bit of scoreboard soccer, they would obviously understand it a lot more when they go and try it on the grass. But yeah, if you're talking 4, 5, 6, 7-year-olds, for me, a lot of that is kind of motor skills and hand-eye coordination and kind of storybook games where you're talking about spaceships and volcanoes and cars and pirates and all this kind of stuff. And then when I think they get to an age where they can play 3v3s and 4v4s, that's when we need to, you know, step back and almost see what they can do before we step in and teach them the finer intricacies of the game. And I think the longer you spend within that bubble of, you know, letting them play games, letting them develop technically and get proficient on the ball and understand 1v1s and 2v2s and this kind of thing, then they'll be better equipped when we want to step in as coaches and speak about formations or playing out from the back or switching play. I think scoreboard soccer really does fit into a bigger, longer-term development of players, if that's what you're happy to invest in and that's your view on football. So that's maybe just to give you an idea of where it fits in. I do loads of scoreboard soccer with 9, 10, 11, 12-year-olds. I have used it with adults as a wee bit of fun and a wee bit of a laugh, you know, pre-season kind of stuff, small-sided games. So anyone has any questions on where and when they would use it, then feel free to do so. But let me just explain a wee bit about what it's all about. So, as I say, if we just have a game of 3v3, there may be some barriers to individual player development there. So what we do is we have a game of 3v3, but we have a scoreboard on the side that's keeping score, and it'll be totally up to you what you think is a good thing to judge. Is it all about goals? Are you going to praise good scanning, good teamwork, good communication? Whatever the positive behaviours are within the game, you can use the scoreboard to praise those behaviours. So, for example, one of the scoreboards we use, really, really simple, is we have games of 3v3 going, but on the side there's a crossbar challenge, for example, if you're lucky enough to be on a pitch where there's a crossbar at the side of the pitch. So we're playing 3v3, Sam gets a ball, dribbles by everyone and scores, and we're saying, well done, Sam, great dribble, great finish, come try and hit the crossbar for a bonus point. Now Sam has dribbled by everyone there, and he's getting praised for good positive behaviour, good positive play, running with the ball, and he's getting that little bit of motivation, that little carrot, and that little reward, that little well done, come and try and hit the crossbar. And that's the fun aspect. Another team are quickly trying to score before Sam gets back on the pitch. But other behaviours we may see, you know, when I see, you know, Sarah comes along and she's a little bit timid, she's not getting many touches of the ball. You know, Sarah makes a good pass with the inside of her foot. And I'm saying, fantastic, Sarah, come across the scoreboard. Let me see if you can hit the crossbar. And, she, you know, if she hits it or she has a good attempt, then I'm saying, oh, unlucky. Hopefully, and what we're finding is those players come back onto the pitch and they want to display those positive behaviours again. So you're just trying to reinforce positive behaviours and positive conduct. You know, if someone takes a shot and a teammate says, oh, unlucky, keep your head up, you're saying, fantastic, David, come across the scoreboard. And we're just trying to praise these behaviours. So we get the 3v3. We get a little bit of fun, whatever the scoreboard is. I've mentioned crossbar challenge, but, you know, we do beat the goalie. We do keeping up competitions. We do ones we need to knock over cones or knock the ball off the top of cones. Again, I can share all the different scoreboards and I'll probably describe some of them as I continue explaining what scoreboard soccer is. But that just allows them, that gives them the motivation to come and try and display it as well. And that's how scoreboard soccer started. It started as something, just a really bit of good fun, because we kind of thought we had two different kinds of kids coming along to our football training. We thought we had the kids that 3v3 would motivate them enough because they loved the game. But then we thought we had the kids who actually loved the scoreboard, or they loved the coach, or they loved being with their friends. And it's how do we actually develop a love for football within the session. And yeah, it started off just being something that was really, really good fun, in our opinion, and the kids are feeding back, they're really enjoying it. But then we started to realise there's loads and loads of hidden learning, and there's loads of development within there. And as we started to get kind of shocked at how quickly some of the players were coming on, you know, a player that you would never imagine would be controlling and turning away from pressure and playing a pass and then getting open, we started to think, you know, there really could be something in this. In regards to just praising those positive behaviours within the game. So, for example, you know, David scores a goal and we're saying, right, well done, David, come across to the beat the goalie. The other team quickly grabbed the ball. They're now 3v2. So there's hidden learning in there in regards to, can we quickly make the most of this attacking overload? Can we get wide? Can we spread out? Can we look to penetrate quickly? The two are trying to defend outnumbered, win the ball, delay the attack for their teammate to get back. And there's loads of transition as well. We've seen these coachable moments where the team of three have all gone forward to try and score. The team of two have won it. They've popped it into the player who's coming back from the scoreboard and they've went and they've scored again. And we can talk a wee bit about balance. You know, someone in the three maybe sitting back. Now, it is a real game-based approach and everything that I've said there isn't all delivered within one session. It's maybe drip-fed over with time. But sometimes it's not needed to be drip-fed in because the kids are recognising it because they're constantly doing overloads or underloads. Obviously, you can start the ball with the conceding team as well, which means they're going 2v3. So we get to create dribblers and creative players. And so hopefully that makes sense. Over a podcast, I don't believe is the best way to demonstrate. I would love it if we were on the grass and I could be showing you these small games. A lot of our scoreboards are technical challenges as well. So while there's a game of 3v3 going, somebody that demonstrates positive behaviour, we praise that positive behaviour and then they come over. We can teach technique at the scoreboard. So one of the scoreboards that we've done worked on throw-ins. So there was a, you know, four cones, a box 10, 15 yards away, and you had to take a throw-in and let it bounce in the box. Now, good technique gets you a point on the scoreboard. Poor technique, we can maybe recognise it and we can do a little bit of coaching in there. So we've done, you know, the free kicks, beat the goalie, passing challenges, trying to knock a ball off cone. Sometimes we stick to a theme, so when we have a 3v3 and the scoreboard is something that's a little bit more passing related, if somebody makes a good pass in the game, that's what we praise. One of the scoreboards that the kids absolutely love, it's called Indiana Jones. It's so if it's 4v4, red against yellow, the reds have a box of four cones on one side of the pitch, the yellows have a box of four cones on the other side of the pitch. There's three footballs in each box, and when you display a positive behaviour, you go to the other team's scoreboard, take one of their footballs, dribble it across the pitch, you know, across the active 3v3, try and make sure you don't get in anyone's way, and put that in your scoreboard. Now, the kids just find that really good fun, you know, being rewarded by stealing a football from the other team, quickly taking it into their box, coming out, first team to get all the footballs in their box wins. But again, there's hidden learning in there, particularly for the younger ones. And I'm thinking about a younger girls team that I did this one with. You kind of create an environment that forces the behaviours you want, because as they're dribbling across the active game of football, they're taking small touches, they're scanning, they're making sure they're not getting hit by the ball within the game, etc., getting in anyone's way. But they're still trying to do it at a decent pace to get back on and help their team, who are currently 3v2 or 4v3. Depending on the numbers. Some of the best scoreboards that we're coming up with, the kids are coming with ideas. We've had board games, we've had X and O's, we've had Snakes and Ladders, we've had Connect Four, loads of different daft fun things. We've had dance competitions for some of the younger boys and girls groups. Whatever's going to motivate them to display positive behaviours in the game, that's what we use as the scoreboard. We had one recently when we were trialing different ones, and again, some of them involve the football, some of them are just involve things that kids enjoy. So if anybody listening can cast their mind back to old school sports days when you used to do the egg and spoon race, which used to be good fun and a good laugh, we did that as a scoreboard. You know, you come to the side, you put the egg on the spoon, you run around the cone, as long as you don't drop it, a point for your team, and then quickly get back on the pitch. And again, you want to go fast enough to get back on and help your team. 1 point if you do it without the ball, but 10 points if you put a ball at your feet, egg on the spoon, and dribble around without dropping it. And, you know, it's not necessarily going to help your footballing technique, but do the kids find it fun? Absolutely. And they're coming back to the sessions, and it's great. And that little bit of hidden learning of, you know, there's Nora over there doing the egg and spoon race, you know, that may seem a bit daft, but on the pitch, we've got a 3v2. So we're working on these overloads and underloads in different situations. So, yeah, hopefully I've kind of painted a picture. I'm cautious that I might be describing it as someone who's been doing it for 4 or 5 years. Small-sided games of football with a scoreboard. Now, some people hear the name and think, well, you know, is score necessarily important at the younger age groups? But the thing that we're keeping score of is totally down to the coaches and what they want to praise. You know, the scoreboard, yes, it might be scoring goals. Yes, it might be defending goals if you're playing with a keeper and they make a good save or a good tackle. But as I say, it might just be positive behaviours, teamwork, scanning, spreading out. You know, I've had kids where you utilise that idea of kind of Q&A, of question and answer, because you ask them to come to the scoreboard and then, you know, well, why did you come to the scoreboard? Because you're wanting them to recognise they didn't even touch the ball. They just scanned and gave a good angle and asked to get on the ball. So you can praise creativity, et cetera, et cetera. Just whatever you think are the positive behaviours you want to praise. And we try and give the players a lot of autonomy as well. You know, design the scoreboard, or what was your favourite one, or what are we going to call this one? You know, so we've got Connect Four, Finding Nemo, Indiana Jones, Coconut Shy. We've got a few different ones that the kids have named the scoreboards, and then they come and they ask for them because they were invested in the design of these scoreboard games. And one of the best things that we do is I noticed, you know, why does it always need to be me that's praising the positive behaviours, and who am I to identify what positive behaviours are? So we try and build a bit of leadership into it as well, you know, for the kind of 11 and 12-year-old kids. 4v4, you know, I'll say to Sam and the red team, Sam, if you see someone from the other team do something that's really positive, tell them well done and send them to the scoreboard, you know. And then Jennifer and the other team, if you see someone from the opposition who does something well, praise them and send them to the scoreboard. And you can see the smile on the kids' faces when they feel so included that someone in the opposite team has said, David, that was a great pass, go give your team a point. So we're developing kids that can communicate and kids that can speak up and praise each other, you know, all this kind of stuff. So no, what initially was meant to just be something really fun, beat the goalie, crossbar challenge, relay races, running alongside games of football, we're actually starting to find that the kids are developing not just football skills, but also people skills as well, which is really important.
The Sports Coaching Podcast with Sam Holmshaw.
Yeah, I think you make some really good points there, actually. You know, you mentioned at the start about, you know, when you were coming through and, you know, the coaching you were experiencing was in a way constraining that you couldn't dribble, but at least you could go and do that on the park. You know, these days, and I think again, I'm not sure too many coaches are aware of it, but we're in this Xbox generation or PlayStation generation where kids these days now aren't going and doing that unstructured free play that what we might term it. So, you know, and if we're just, you know, doing technical based sessions all the time, you know, we're creating players that they just don't have any creativity at all. You know, they're essentially robots. But you know, I think you make a really good point as well. You know, where you say there's a lot of stuff at the minute almost trendy that says, you know, just play the game. But you're right, you know, I think back to when I played at school, you know, we just played the game on the field at break time. But ability, you know, did determine how much of the ball you got. That's such a great point that, yeah, you know, I think it's a really clever concept. And, you know, in my last master's assignment, we've just done a lot of work actually around practice design. And, you know, sort of listening to you there and what I'm hearing is it's, you know, I think a lot of particularly maybe grassroots coaches, practice design is maybe sometimes too much of the forefront. And, you know, from just listening to you there, it's almost like scoreboard soccer is kind of taking that element away. So it's, you know, everything, it's designed to promote learning, you know, the development of these technical, tactical skills, psychological skills, physiological skills, social skills, and so on and so on. And then it's allowing the coach to really sit back and think, okay, actually, what behaviours might I just add for this player specifically, or this player specifically, or this player to help them? Yeah. And I really like that. I think that's really clever, you know, just listening to you there. In the wider picture, I think it's challenging that perception of coaching, isn't it? You know, there's a perception here, you know, I'm not too sure about Scotland, but certainly in England, that, you know, the coach's role is giving feedback all the time, you know, always doing... It has to look like a technical-based focus session. You know, actually, you know, you mentioned player ownership. So, you know, if you've got this, you know, little Tom coming up to you and saying, yeah, we want to do a buckaroo, and, you know, that game is designed around allowing them, you know, to develop something themselves, well, that's brilliant. That's still coaching. You know, we don't have to be giving this feedback all the time. And, yeah, no, I mean, I think it's a brilliant concept, to be honest. I don't think there's enough player ownership. I think that's kind of gone out of the game, if you like, of sports in the last couple of years. And I think, again, that's the importance of these, you know, games-based approaches, the other ones like non-linear pedagogy, that's kind of trying to provide that back and allowing the player to just develop it themselves. Because at the end of the day, it's the player who's learning. You know, and it's our job just to facilitate that learning rather than giving all the answers.
Yeah, and player ownership, player autonomy. Again, another thing that I learned when you plan a scoreboard soccer session, you deliver one, you come back, you look at all your notes, you say, well, I rewarded so and so for this, I rewarded so and so for this, and then you realise, why is the word I in there so much? Why am I always rewarding the players there? You know, because that's kind of what I'm against, is my voice being heard all the time. You can't have 16 kids out there and you hear one coach. That just doesn't make sense to me. So you set up the scoreboard soccer and you say to, you know, Sarah and the red team, Sarah, if you think anyone in the blue team does something that needs rewarded, can you tell them to come over? And you say, you know, David in the blue team, if you think someone from the other team. And, you know, is there a better feeling as a 10-year-old kid when someone in the other team says, oh, by the way, David, that was a fantastic pass. You know, go try and hit the crossbar for a bonus point. Because then we're maybe developing leaders and loud people and communication. And so it's... As you can hopefully tell, it's snowballing into different ways and different things. And obviously, you need to deliver this at the appropriate age, appropriate stage, and with the appropriate people. You know, I'm working with loads of kids that you can do a bit more to them. And obviously, if they're a wee bit further in their development, we're actually talking about, you know, formations and playing out from the back. Of course, I'm not saying this is the be-all and end-all. Mm. I'm just saying you may have kids who need more game time and need, like, some fun motivation on the side. And as I say, it really does help with that mixed ability level. Kind of idea, because you get 3v2s and you get 2v3s. It doesn't always need to be, this will all be in the resource obviously, but it doesn't always need to be, you know, when I score and I go to a scoreboard, the other team take the ball out of their net and start. You know, my team can take the ball, but I'm off, so they're 2v3 for a minute and they're actually, they have an attacking underload, which we maybe don't do enough in coaching practice sometimes. So, yeah, as I say, it's growing arms and legs. It was just meant to be something that was really good fun. You know, let's put in some games, but put a bit of a carrot so they're displaying the behaviours that we want to see or I want to see. Now, coaches listening will have different behaviours they want to see. They might be huge on communication. And more often than not, when a player shouts man on or 1-2 or unlucky on that shot, they're rewarding that. And that's the behaviours you'll bring to the surface through more scoreboard soccer. Yeah. You might have a team that are really, really... You really want to talk about pressing and you really want your kids to work really, really hard on pressing, and the ones that are running the most, they're the ones that you're rewarding. That's absolutely fine. Because sometimes I do deliver it with a theme. As I say, you can... So there's a little scoreboard soccer one we have that's dribbling, where essentially if you get rewarded in a small-sided game, what the scoreboard is, you take a ball out of the other team's scoreboard, you dribble it through some cones or you do a skill move, you put it in your scoreboard and you get back on. So if we're doing that, dribbling's maybe the behaviour that I will, praise. You know, the one that I spoke about trying to take a throw-in and the ball bouncing in the box, if we're playing a small-sided game of football, the rule is when the ball goes out, it's a throw-in. If David takes a really good throw-in, we're rewarding that behaviour by saying, come take another throw-in at the side for a point kind of stuff. So, yeah, we've got crossing and finishing. We've got 1v1 with the goalkeeper. It's been really great to incorporate the goalkeeper at times as well. Obviously, within the small-sided games, if you're using goalkeepers, then they're getting loads of game-based activity, loads of 1v1s, loads of saving, loads of reaction, loads of playing out from the back. If you maybe have that one goalkeeper and you're not sure what team to give the goalkeeper to, if the scoreboard is a beat the goalie or a 1v1 with the keeper, or, you know, go and hit a corner kick, and if the keeper catches it, that's your point for the scoreboard. That's your keeper coming and receiving it from the opposition, taking a corner. So, there's loads. And as I say, I've put them all together. And the biggest thing from the resource that I've put together, I'm going to finish it with a lot of player footage in there. But it also says in there, you know, what can other coaches think of as scoreboards? Because some of the best ideas certainly haven't came from myself.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think as a finishing point to this segment, you mentioned hidden learning, and it's that idea of the hidden curriculum. And I like that. I really like that about the whole framework. The learning without realising the learning it. And, you know, I don't know if you're aware of, you know, the ideas of implicit or explicit learning, but if you've learned something implicitly, which is unconsciously, you're more likely to successfully perform that in the performance environment. And again, I think that's so important. If we're making players explicit to everything we teach them, well, as soon as they get into that environment and pressure and anxiety and all that sort of stuff, that's where we kind of lose the player a bit. But... And you know, again, just, I don't want to say I think what I'm hearing is it's like clever coaching. And I don't mean that any other coaching is not clever, if you know what I'm trying to say. But it's like, because this framework's in place, it's kind of taking care of almost the learning and development. And then you as the coach are just adding in certain bits that can just help that towards a certain concept you want to go to, if you know what I mean.
That's a great avenue to go down as well. We want to talk about actually coaching scoreboard soccer. You know, education's massive as well, and I'm always big on investing in the parents and the guardians and the journey, because if Sarah jumps in the car and says we played 3v3 in a game of Buckaroo, your parents are maybe thinking, you know, what am I potentially paying for? But that fact that, look, I call it environment-based learning. I call scoreboard soccer environment-based learning. I've set the environment so they'll come and subconsciously learn and do things that create really, really good habits. Mm. But what that allows me... Because the thing is, see, if I'm instructing, there's a couple of dangers of me instructing all the time. My voice might become, you know, water off a duck's back if I'm talking all the time. Whereas if my environment's right and I just need to jump in every now and then, they know if I'm saying something, there's a real reason for it, and they'll listen a little bit more. Also, I need to watch my instruction, because they can't take everything I say as gospel. These kids are going to, you know, evolve the game. They're going to play the game of 2030 or 2040. I don't want to be teaching them anything of my negative experience of a player from the 1990s. You know, what are they going to learn from that? I say all the time, if my players took everything I say as gospel, they'd only grow up to be as good as me, and I wouldn't wish that on anyone. So I'm just trying to create the environment that the students overtake the teacher kind of thing. And that's what we need. I think we need to evolve the game, because I say it as well, I don't think we've seen a Cruyff turn until like 1974. So, you know, these kids need to evolve the game and do different things. But, you know, having said that, there are times that within the small-sided games, I'll maybe do a freeze and I'll maybe recreate something and use a little bit of Q&A and do more traditional coaching. But the environment's up, so my instruction can come down and they're learning without maybe knowing that they're learning. One of the biggest things for me that I was going to touch on there in regards to the environment is, I'm trying to think of how I can put it. Yeah, you might need to come back to me on it. But yeah, the game is the teacher essentially, and the scoreboard is the praise and the behaviours. I'll try and think of how to paint the picture of the point I was going to make. But I'm totally with you on the hidden learning kind of idea.
Yeah, and I think, you know, again, a really great point you make. The game's ever changing. You know, football's ever changing. I have this discussion with coaches all the time that are so set on teaching a certain aspect of the game, you know, for football, or coaching a certain way because that's what they've done for 10 years. That's what they've done for 20 years. You know, I had a coach turn around to me once and say, listen, I've produced X, Y, and Z professional player, and that's why you should coach with an instruction-based approach. Yeah, but that's great. But it's ever-changing. People are ever-changing.
Yeah.
You know, the sport's ever-changing. Yeah. Coaching's ever-changing. So, you know, for me as a coach, and I hear concepts like, you know, this today, I'm always open to it. And I think that's just such a key point. You know, like you say, those players that are 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, they're going to be playing to 20, 30, 20, 40. How different is the game then? If you think about the game now to it was in 2000, it's such a, and that's just not football, that's every sport. No, that's such a great point you make.
Yeah, and maybe getting ahead of the curve a wee bit, because I think if you were to try and predict the future, you know, you need to be pretty technically proficient from centre-back to striker, from goalkeeper, whatever. So a little bit more ball time and playing the game, I don't think it's going to hurt anyone. But we might be completely wrong, as you say, because the game's going to change. The point that I was going to make was how that education is crucial, because, you know, parents might stand and watch my session and think, well, he's not actually doing anything. It's because I've done all my work off the pitch. I've planned my environment, so I don't need to do anything. Yeah. But having said that, I have never been as exhausted as a coach than I have been delivering scoreboard soccer, because the observation skills, because you're trying to observe, you know, who needs what information, because there will be kids who need a little bit of information and who do need coaching points. So you're watching your small-sided games of football. You're having to make sure that you're not praising kids too much. You know, you're praising them by their ability level. If I know that David's decent at passing and moving, I'm not going to praise every correct pass he's going to make, because I'm really only praising him if he's taking on three or four players and scoring a goal, because that's his level. Yeah. Whereas if I know that Sarah needs to work on passing a little bit more, that's what I'm going to encourage. So it's exhausting watching it and saying, okay, you know, Sarah's made that mistake 3 times now. I'm going to give it another 4 or 5 times and see if she self-corrects it, as you were saying there about that intricate learning. Then, you know, she's going to have ownership of that learning. She's worked it out and she's not, you know. But if it doesn't get to that point and it's a repeated mistake that I have identified through my observation skills, I need to maybe go in and, you know, bring her across the scoreboard and do a wee drill with her, or maybe go in and recreate something on the pitch. But you need to invest your parents and your guardians on the fact that, look, I've set this environment for them to learn, and if I go in and teach them through instruction, they're not going to learn. You know, it's like, if I solve problems for them, then they've not learned. I've solved the problems for them. You know, these kids, for example, the kids I do it with, they're at the same age that when they go to school, the teacher says, you know, if you have 50 pence to spend 10p on a chocolate bar, how much have you got left? And they need to problem solve and then have ownership for that learning. The teacher isn't just saying, by the way, if you have 50p and you spend 10p, you now have 40p. There you go. Now you know that. You won't forget that. There's no fun there. There's no engagement of the brain and there's no learning. So we need to do the same in football. But I used to be quite an instruction-based coach. I now would describe myself an environment-based coach. But after sessions, I've never been so exhausted. Observation exhausts me a lot more than giving instruction. You know, standing there and watching and seeing, okay, who needs a little carrot to reach for on a scoreboard, and who needs to get a touch of the ball, who's making what mistakes, and actually trying to look at them as I say, through instruction, give me 10 players and I'll do a basic session plan that says, right, we're going to do this, then we're going to add one defender, then we're going to add a goal, and the 3 coaching points throughout the whole session is going to be inside the foot, middle of the ball, aim with a standing foot. I'll do that and I'll come home and I won't be exhausted at all. Give me 10 players who are all different individuals, who all need to work on different things, and I need to observe them playing small-sided games of football, praise them, challenge and support them all at different times. Scoreboard soccer's, if done properly, it's absolutely exhausting. And if you want a wee day off, just let them play and nobody will notice. But if you want to do it properly, it's knackering.
The Sports Coaching Podcast with Sam Holmshaw.
Sorry, so yeah, no, I think what you're alluding to there is the concept of individualization, which it's that theory of you're working with every player and, you know, almost like adding progressions per player or regressions per player and constraining it to what they need to work on. And you're so right. It's so exhausting because, like you say, if you're just doing this traditional coaching approach, is, you know, a bit of praise, bit of instruction, feedback, etc., that's great, but it's nothing compared to when you have to physically watch every single player. Well, actually, Sarah's struggling a bit on pass. Let's maybe, you know, add in a rule there for you, or he needs to work on dribbling. How are we going to change? It is, you're so right, so exhausting, but also so rewarding, isn't it?
You're thinking about 10 players and then 100 different things that they are doing as well. And then you're also thinking as well, you know, so-and-so, I want them to be a little bit more resilient. So I'm actually not going to praise them as much tonight. That's a tough thing.
Definitely. And I think, you know, like you say there, it's being aware of the information that you're receiving from that player or, you know, from the environment. So, you know, does that player actually... do I really actually need to benefit them for performing this skill? No, so don't do it then. Because, you know, the negative aspect can be if I'm praising them too much, they then become reliant on that. Or if I'm telling them too much, they become reliant on that for me. And, you know, end of the day, you want that player ownership. They need to be able to perform that themselves. But again, you know, this conversation we're having, it kind of highlights the importance of really sitting back and considering your coaching practice. In the sense of, you know, being aware of all this differing information from the environment. You know, each player offers so much information about their performance and, you know, being aware, do I need to change something or add something here or give him a little, you know, pep talk or whatever about a certain skill, or actually, no, they're super. So, you know, I don't actually need to give them as much feedback. Still a bit to keep them going, but not too much. I think, you know, it really great points, and it's, often people aren't too aware of that in my experience.
And it's tough again because sometimes there's external pressures such as a mum or a dad that stayed to watch the session, or a kid who's thinking, you know, why has the coach not said anything to me yet? And that's why you need to, because if you're an instructor, if these are the kind of things that motivate you and you want to actually appear to be a top coach as opposed to maybe be a top coach, then it's very hard to do both. You know, you need to go in and freeze it and talk about it and look as if you're working with a player, speak to every player. And this comes from experience as well. Like, I've worked with some fantastic coaches and I've viewed some fantastic coaches, but I've been fortunate enough to also work with a few Dell boys in the coaching world. You know, so I had someone who was a manager of me working for a particular club at a particular organisation that always used to say, just make sure the first 5 minutes and the last 5 minutes of your session are spot on, because that's when the parents are picking them up. Try and do something that they get loads of touches, they pass and they follow, they pass and move, and just try and do something that looks great from the car park. And as a young and naive coach, I thought, yeah, well, that makes sense. But then I'm thinking, you know, why is he selling it to me as if he's Derek Trotter? You know, what am I missing here? And the thing was, if everything's going smoothly and the kids are never making a mistake, it looks great, but are they learning? Probably not. It's probably pitched too easy and too comfortable and within their comfort zones. So you want to get that wee bit of chaos and you want to get that wee bit of making mistakes. I think you always want the goal within reach as long as they work hard enough and they trial and error on their way towards that ultimate goal. But it needs to be challenging to get there. That's how they learn.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I experienced that. It's, you know, when you're working at, for example, a grassroots club, it's a lot easier to speak to the parents and, you know, try and explain this to them. Because ultimately, you know, just through years and years of technical-based coaching, that's the expectation from parents. That's the expectation from stakeholders. You know, when you're working in for a coaching company, I had an experience, you know, towards the end of last year where, you know, I had a couple of angry parents coming up, you know, what are we paying you for? You know, you stood there, you're not saying anything. You're giving a bit of praise now and again. And you're right, it's difficult. And like you say, you know, yeah, but, you know, if we're doing that all the time, they're not learning anything. And, you know, I get what I always say to people you know, in my own role as coach education at Leeds Beckett, is, you know, just got to try and do the best you can within your context, because these are the challenges you're probably going to face, you know, because ultimately that is the perception. Now, if you can try and educate the stakeholders, you know, and try and explain some of these ideas and why you're doing that, then that might help you within that context, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely, I absolutely agree, and I think it's just trying to line everything up, you know. The coach, the player, and I call it the supporter, so whether that's a mum, dad, parent, guardian, older brother, older sister, coach, coach, player and supporter all singing off the same hymn sheet, because there may be ones that, whether it's the supporter or the player themselves, that this approach actually isn't for them. And that's absolutely fine. They don't want to be in an environment-based kind of coaching sessions. They want to go and get an instruction-based coach, because maybe that's what they react to a little bit better. And that's absolutely fine. But yeah, I've had mums and dads come to me as well and say, you know, your Matthew didn't get too much coaching today. Was there something wrong? Or what do you think he can be working on? And how come you're not giving them a lot of information? And then, you know, I use Q&A with the parents and say, well, what do you want me to say to them? Well, maybe tell them how to pass the ball. Well, tell them how to pass the ball, then, you know, he's not learning. Then if I'm telling him how to pass the ball, would you not really work out how to pass the ball? So sometimes you can be a wee bit facetious with it, and just, you know, in my experience, the parents or guardians, they're not being bad people. They're just, they've never thought that way, and they maybe not, you know, I try and do a lot of educational seminars because I enjoy it. I travel a lot for my job. So when I'm driving to and from games or training sessions, football's kind of my life. You know, I don't want to listen to One Direction or Justin Bieber. I want to pick up the phone and speak to a parent. You know, that's the kind of stuff that I want to do. Maybe that's just me. Yeah. So I spend quite a bit of time on that, and word of mouth travels a little bit. So just saying to parents or guardians, you know, I know you're going to have... you know, desires to maybe shout from the sideline, and we encourage that. We want you to be supportive, but see if you want a wee bit of information on some of the do's and don'ts. If you really want to invest in your kids' learning, let's come and have a conversation with it. Yeah. You know, some of them don't realise, and coaches are same, maybe don't realise how much they're talking or how many answers or instruction that they're giving. I did a great exercise. Self-awareness is massive as a coach, for where you are and what you need to learn. And I did a great exercise a couple of years ago that was prompted by a more experienced coach that I really expect us to say. I had a stopwatch on my wrist. See, every time you start talking, just take your session as normal. Every time you start talking, hit the stopwatch. Every time you stop it. And then I had to look at how much I was talking. I added that up over how many sessions I did a week, how many sessions I did a month, how many sessions I did a year. And I realised how much time the kids are just listening to me instead of playing or learning football. And that helped me reduce it as well. And then, you know, if you're lucky enough to have the money to go on some of these fantastic, you know, UEFA licence courses, which is a different topic of conversation, because I'm currently on one, and it's just absolutely fantastic. But, you know, they're talking about video analysis. I use a coach, and they're amazing at creating an environment where you can watch yourself back and have a bit of self-awareness and learn from it. But I'm saying to grassroots guys, like, does your other coach have an iPhone? Do you want to just, you know, can you put yourself out there a wee bit and just ask them to video you? Because you might not actually have that self-awareness. And saying to the parents, because that's what we're coming back to here as well, just to say, guys, I'm here to help the players, to help the team as much as I can. And one thing that might help is if we all just take a look at the environment on game day. So, you know, David, who's working with me today, every now and then is just going to pull out his video and some of the parents maybe don't realise that they're giving answers constantly from the side of the pitch. They're not trying, in my experience, they're not trying to be a bad people.
Yeah.
Just trying to educate them that, oh, look, you said that. Oh, look, David, here's a video of you saying put it in the mixer. Right, let's ask all the kids, do you know what that means when I say put it in the mixer? Nah, I don't, because that's terminology from the 90s. Like, do you know what I mean, kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely.
So those exercises, for me, they're all great. They're all fantastic.
Yeah, no, that's... that's some really, really, really great advice, actually, especially with the parents. And, you know, one of the lecturers on the master's course, Andrew Abraham, who you might have come across of, he talks about six knowledge domains. So, you know, like knowledge of context, knowledge of the sport, knowledge of the participant, knowledge of the athlete. But he also talks about knowledge of self, you know, being self-aware of what you're doing. And, you know, from my experience, you know, 7 years in and not really reflecting too much on the first 5 years, but for the last 2 years, me doing a lot of self-reflection has actually made me such a better coach, understanding what I'm doing. And you know, I was chatting to another coach a couple of weeks back, and you know, he said it's about being conscious to the subconscious, you know, being aware of what you're doing, probably without thinking about it, and what's the effect on that. And you know, really interesting stuff. I'm just a bit conscious of time, David. I want to be respectful to your time, but I've really enjoyed this today. A really enjoyable discussion. I don't know if there's any finishing points you just want to add around scoreboard soccer or just anything else.
No, we had that kind of sort quick discussion off air about you know the idea of scoreboard soccer and you know competitiveness with younger people, because that's a big topic of discussion. You know, should we have leagues? Should we have points? Should we have whatever? And the thing about scoreboard soccer, it depends what you're keeping score on. You know, as I say, it's not always the kid who scores. It's behaviours and reinforcing positive behaviours, and it's teamwork and you know, and what is winning and losing at these particular age groups. Again, it depends if your listeners and where they're going to apply this. Hopefully there's somewhere they can apply it. But yeah, it's just getting those positive behaviours and understanding that the people before their players. I think kids in general are competitive, and this scoreboard idea really does drive them on. And you know, the scoreline doesn't need to be the be all and end all in football, but at the end of the day, that's what football is. One team trying to put more goals by the other team, and sometimes it's a great gauge of your development. So I know we touched on it a wee bit off air, just because it is called scoreboard soccer, and you're saying, we'll see with the younger players, is it about development or is it about winning? Is there any harm in developing winners? And then you need to dig a wee bit deeper on, you know, what is your definition of winners? So if I'm taking an under 12 recreational soccer team over in the States, and you know, one coach's team beats me 3-0, and then they leave and they're gloating about it, whereas my kids, without being prompted, have tidied the changing room, put all the water bottles in the bin, shook the referee's hand, and thanked the facility for the game. You know, who's the winner there? So that's, because that is a question I've had about scoreboard soccer. You know, should we really be talking about scoreboards at the younger ones? It's like, well, it depends. Like, if you want to use it as an actual scoreboard, I use it as, you know, the team that communicates the most might win, the team who praises the most might win. And the scoreboard can work in a negative way. You know, I do get kids to come over and take a score off their team because someone's missed a shot and someone shouted, why didn't you pass to me? That was a rubbish shot. And you're saying, well, actually, you know, come across and take a score. You know, it's just a coaching tool. That's all it is.
Yeah, definitely.
So as I say, I've pulled it together in quite a concise resource. Thanks for your time today to talk about it, and hopefully some of your listeners maybe want to see some of it. It's not the be all and end all. It's nothing revolutionary. It's small sided games of football, and it does engage a wee bit of thinking of any coaches that want to use it. Like, what scoreboards can they come up with? What scoreboards can your players come up with as well? Because some of the best ones I've used have came from the kids.
Yeah, definitely. No, I mean, pretty confident quite a few would be interested. I think it's a great framework, you know, and you know, just from my experience, I don't feel that there's enough tools for coaches starting out and coming into this crazy world we're both involved in. Frameworks like that are fantastic for coaches, you know, giving them the tool, like you say, to begin, you know, and you're not saying this tool and going, right, this is how you have to do it. You're providing them a tool to create their own scoreboard. And I think it's a brilliant concept, David. I really do.
I do think, unfortunately, there's another side to it. Well, sometimes there's not enough tools, and sometimes there's too many with social media and Facebook and et cetera. But you've got to see that as a positive. That's another thing that's a different topic for conversation. I do see a lot of coaches getting a lot of stick for their ideas on social media. And it's like, you know, why are we being negative about someone that's taking the time to share some ideas that might help you? You know, it's down to this. You know, this grassroots coach as well that gets a little bit of stick, and you're saying, you know, let's maybe not be nasty towards someone who's given up their time to help other people's kids. Yeah. let's maybe just remember that. And it's the same. I'm a firm believer when it obviously my resource is one of them. I've put it out there. I don't think there's any bad content. The only bad content I think is when I see something that potentially is a health and safety issue, and I think, okay, I'm not going to use that. Yeah. There's no bad content on the internet. There's only irrelevant content.
Yeah.
You know. If you look at something and you think, you know, there's people running around and they're not using the ball, that's not for me. Like, you have no idea what that content is or where those people are or what level they're playing at or why they're doing it.
Nah.
You know, have a wee look. Be thankful for people that are sharing stuff and take what applies to you. But yeah, we're going to, I don't know why we ended up going down this route. I guess it's just because my reason is coming out. some of you might think it's a bit daft, a bit silly, but hopefully some of your listeners can use it.
No, I'm sure they will be. Fantastic conversation. Really enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to coaching tomorrow afternoon now. David, you know, thank you so much for your time. If anyone listening, they want to, contact you, follow you, maybe speak to you a bit more about Scoreboard Soccer, how can they get in contact with you? What's the best way to find you?
Yeah, well, my most recent resource I brought out is called Practice Through Play. Everything that we've kind of discussed today has been about, practicing through playing the game. So I've got that hashtag. If you hashtag Practice Through Play, you'll find the resource, you'll find my social media pages, et cetera, et cetera. Within that Practice Through Play, obviously I've got some small-sided games, some technical sessions, all stuff that hasn't been reinventing the wheel. It's a lot of my favourite practices as opposed to anything original I've came up with. But I did drip feed in there some scoreboard sessions that I did come up with, and people have said that they've been working really well when they've delivered them, and that's why my next resource is Scoreboard Soccer. So I've got Coach David Baird on Facebook, Coach David Baird on Twitter, and hashtag kind of Practice Through Play if you want to see some of the content. And within the resource, the last page has, I think, my email address and phone number on it. So always happy to maybe help coaches that are maybe newer in their journey and learn from coaches that there's so many coaches out there that know so much more than me. I've heard half of them on your podcast already, Sam. So that's how to get in touch.
Super stuff, David. It just leaves me to say thank you so much for your time. Not many would want to chat coaching on a Friday night rather than in the pub having a couple of beers, but thank you so much for your time, David. Really, really interesting and fascinating discussion, and as mentioned throughout, some really great points for coaches to pick up and implement into your own coaching. So thank you so much for your time. Thanks again for everyone that's listening, and we'll see you all next week.